Good morning and welcome to WMNF's Midpoint, your midweek, mid-morning source for news and public affairs from a local perspective. I'm your host, Shelley Rebeck, and I'm here today with our terrific WMNF operations volunteer, Jessica Green, who's running the soundboard for us. In Florida lately, you could be forgiven if you believe we live in opposite world, where state government tells us that up is down and black is white and government control is freedom. The latest expression of our governor's march into autocracy was yesterday, when you may have seen that Governor Ron issued a proclamation stating that, quote, "Since she's a native Floridian from Sarasota, I, Ron DeSantis, governor of the state of Florida, do hereby declare in Florida that Emma Wyant is the rightful winner of the 2022 NCAA Division I Women's 500-Yard Freestyle." The only problem is that Emma Wyant actually lost her race to trans swimmer Leah Thomas. But Ron DeSantis is determined to erase any evidence of the existence of LGBTQ and trans people in Florida. So, ignoring the facts, he just proclaimed another swimmer the winner. This has to be among the silliest, although also most hurtful, of DeSantis's efforts to erase the LGBTQ community in Florida. How do you just wipe out and ignore a winner's performance and declare your favored candidate the winner? It's almost like saying that vote totals in an election don't count and someone other than the winner of an election is actually the winner. And, oh, wait, yeah, they do that too. In other news, yesterday was the Disney walkout. Hundreds of Disney workers walked out over the company's weak response to Florida's so-called Don't Say Gay bill, which is on its way to DeSantis's desk as we speak. The Don't Say Gay bill is legislation that would restrict discussion of gender identity and sexual orientation in public schools. DeSantis's response was to call Disney a woke corporation for opposing the bill. And of course, he loves anything woke. And of course, we are waiting for the governor's signature to drop on the Don't Say Gay bill itself, which DeSantis has said he supports. It forbids any discussion of sexual orientation or gender identity in public school, at least in grades K through 3, but perhaps more, and it provides that parents can sue if it occurs. But ultimately, the law is so vague that it will be hard to tell what a violation of the Don't Say Gay law would look like until at least until the Florida Department of Education comes out with some guidelines once the bill is signed into law. In the shadow of all of these efforts to erase the LGBTQ community in Florida, this weekend, Tampa is celebrating Pride, and we're going to say gay. We're going to say gay all day. 3 days, in fact, of street festivaling and events and general merriment celebrating the LGBTQ plus community beginning on Friday, March 25th in Ybor City. So with us here in the studio today to talk about what is in store for the Pride Festival in 2022 is Debbie Ducco, the Pride Entertainment Coordinator. So welcome, Debbie.
Thank you.
We're also happy to welcome Andrew Klum, a transgender 25-year-old man who went through the Florida public school system as he began his transition and lived to tell about it. He has some thoughts to share with us about his experience and the Don't Say Gay legislation and DeSantis's recent efforts in Florida to reverse decades of progress in gay, lesbian, bi, and trans civil rights. So we're happy to have you with us too, Andrew.
Happy to be here. Got lots to say.
And Andrew's mom is with us on the telephone. Leanne Klum represents GLESN, G-L-E-S-N, which is an organization that champions LGBTQ issues in K through 12 education since 1990. GLESN works to ensure that LGBTQ students are able to learn and grow in a school environment that's free from bullying and harassment. As Leanne went through Andrew's experience with him, she wants to share her perspective as a parent of a trans student in Florida public school. We're glad you could be with us too, Leanne. Are you with us?
I am, and I'm happy to be here. And okay. I'm also on the Hillsborough County Council PTA as their LGBTQ liaison.
Okay, we're going to need you to speak up quite a bit.
I can do that.
Okay. I'm going to start and end the show with Debbie, giving us some happy information on what we can expect this year from Tampa Pride, because everyone loves a street party, and Pride promises to bring it on. So, Debbie, tell us, what can we expect from Tampa Pride this year?
Tampa Pride this year, we have a sold-out parade, which basically is going to be the largest parade down in Ybor City on 7th Avenue.
Now, when's the parade?
The parade is Saturday, and it starts at 4 o'clock.
And it's going to go down 7th Avenue in Ybor.
In Ybor.
Who's the marshal this year, the parade marshal?
We have quite a few different grand marshals. We never just pick one in particular. The names of them, let me find, I don't remember them all because there's like five. We have one special grand marshal, though, that is Tiffany Middlesex. She was a performer in Ybor City from the El Goya days way back, and she recently passed away, and we made her an honorary grand marshal. And we have a special event going in the parade with a New Orleans jazz band second line in her tribute. So that's going to be something different.
That's cool. Don't we have a RuPaul
We have two RuPaul girls here. They're going to be performing Pride at Night, Aja and Candy Muse. And it's going to be really exciting because they haven't performed together since RuPaul. So it's going to be interesting
When and where is that?
It's in the Cuban Club courtyard. And it's in their, it's the Pride at Night starts at 7 o'clock. Right after the parade, you can go in, stop by the food truck alley and go in and watch the RuPaul girls.
Okay. So we're having our own Pride here in Tampa, but isn't St. Pete Pride the Mac Daddy of Pride festivals? I mean, is it like second only to Key West? Are we the little sister to St. Pete Pride?
St. Pete Pride is bigger than Tampa because they've been going longer than we were because we had to, ours was stopped by the city for a while, so we just started
yes.
back up.
Remember? Let us not forget former County Commissioner Rhonda Storms. So weren't there a few years when we didn't have Pride in Tampa because Rhonda Storms, a bigoted county commissioner, got the commission, then commission, not today's commission, to ban any acknowledgement of what she said, quote, gay pride.
Right. Exactly.
Little G, little P, as she used to put it, in Hillsborough County.
Right. So we all kind of went to St. Pete Pride for a while until we got ours back.
But isn't June the official Pride month? And our Pride is now, in
June
March.
Is the official Pride month. We do ours in March. One, because of the weather is cooler for everybody to be out and about, walking in the parade. And a lot of the colleges are on spring break, so it gives the kids something to come down here and relax and enjoy Florida sunshine.
Pride, I know Equality always touts the fact that Pride is good for business, and I suppose it is. I mean, it's a way to really put people into Ybor City for a weekend, isn't it?
It is. We had Pride last year in May because of COVID, and we had to cancel it a couple of times. And we had over 80,000 people in May.
Wow.
And that was with COVID. So we're expecting over 100,000 people this year.
And who comes to Pride? Like, are allies welcome?
Allies are more than welcome. It's a family event because the kids are welcome. They get the beads just like they do at Gasparilla. They have a kid-friendly area with face painting and things like that. We even have a area set aside for autistic children that are need sensory quiet zones and stuff. Oh. We even have that set up.
Where is that? Or where and when?
That's the day of the parade. Uh-huh. It's down by the, Centennial Park.
Okay.
If you get the Tampa Pride guide from Watermark, it has the map in there telling you where everything is at and to locate it, like the sensory park, where the parking is, where the Cuban Club is, where the inside of the Cuban Club is.
Now, do you have a website that has that information?
Watermark.com has the Pride on, you can get it online.
Okay.
Or if you see a Watermark magazine that's out at a lot of the different places, I'm not specifically sure where they drop them off at, but You can pick it up there.
But watermark.com has all the information on its website?
Yes.
Okay. And what is it free?
Yes, it is.
So all the events are free?
All the events are free at Tampa Pride, even the Pride at Night with the RuPaul girls. Everything is free.
Wow. Great. Well, it sounds like it's going to be a really hot weekend, then really fun
and
weekend.
And if you're at Pride and you get really hot, the Inside the Cuban Club, we have entertainment from 11 o'clock until 10 o'clock at night. And you can come in, sit down, have a drink, and relax and watch the shows inside.
All right. Well, thanks, Debbie. I'm going to turn to Andrew now, to Andrew and Leanne, because I want to thank them both for coming in to share their experience as advocates for trans kids in the school system. Before I go there, though, Debbie, is there anything in particular that's going to be at Pride related to Don't Say Gay, or is that just generally going to be a theme?
That's just going to be a theme of saying gay all day long. We're trying to keep it family friendly and just let people enjoy themselves and not think about what our governor's trying to do to us.
Okay. All right. So it's going to be 3 days of celebration of the LGBTQ plus community.
Yes.
This weekend, and we have to be sure to tell the people that it's this weekend
starting Friday,
right?
And then Tuesday after Pride is Pride Night at the Tampa Bay Lightning.
Oh, okay.
And Carrie West, the president of Tampa Pride, is going to drop the puck.
Oh, okay. So that's nice. So for all you hockey fans, Tuesday night is Pride Night at the Lightning. All right. So let me turn to Andrew and Leanne now. But before I do, if you'd like to share your experiences either with Pride or in the schools as a young person dealing with developing sexual awareness or with being bullied for what your peers may have perceived to be your own sexual identity, give us a call and tell us about it. I think these stories are so important. Do you think that the Don't Say Gay law will affect how kids are received in school? Obviously, a lot of the organizations do, but we want to know what you think. So call us at 813-239-9663 or email dj@wmnf.org or text us at 813-433-0885. All right, so let me start with you, Andrew. You're a trans man.
Correct.
You're 25 years old?
24.
24, okay. And you went through the Hillsborough County Public Schools or where?
Yeah, I was a student of Hillsborough County from, I moved here in about second grade and then graduated in 2016.
So tell us about transitioning as a young person and how it affected your experience in school. Your peers, your teachers, the administration. Did you feel supported? Did you feel ostracized? What was that like?
It was really kind of, I guess, eye-opening experience for multiple different reasons. And my mom will kind of be able to go into the more support route, kind of go in more on that end. But the big thing was we didn't know who to turn to because you don't know who's safe. There wasn't any kind of guidelines or anything that were readily available to the public that we knew about. So it was kind of a pick and choose kind of thing. So for myself, when I just coming out doing social transition kind of things, like changing the name, pronouns, it was a lot of, all right, I've spent time with this teacher. I know them, or I had them last year. So I kind of have a good idea if they're safe to come out. Luckily, a lot of the teachers at my high school were very, very welcoming, and they kind of some went out of their way to really affirm LGBTQ students. Others were affirming, but I guess they didn't know the rules. Can I display this kind of thing? So it was kind of having to pick out the vibe. So I ended up only coming out to probably, I'd say, majority of the teachers that I had. But
do you feel comfortable disclosing what your school was, which school it was?
Yes, I was in Newsom High School. I came out around late 2014, early 2015. So that's kind of when I began to transition. So yeah, I'd say around then, and yeah, Newsom High School.
So from your experience, most of your teachers were supportive, but did they make a big deal of it, or was it just an accepting, quiet accepting, or was it announced to the class, or, how did it present in school? Because I know that that's one of the issues that, has prompted Don't Say Gay. There's the sponsors of the bill have alleged that teachers are grooming students in schools. So tell us from your experience whether that makes sense to you or not.
I do want to preface, I think I was also really lucky just in terms of my response, because the teachers I had were really positive. And I mean, I had, I probably came out about halfway through the year after kind of getting a vibe. The teachers probably took half a year to just be like, okay, these are the ones I'm coming out to. And my mom helped me craft some emails, be like, all right, this is my situation. And it was just like it was kind of a no big deal. Be like, all right, this is the name I want to go by. These are the pronouns. And so the teacher was aware and they started using my names and pronouns. They didn't make an announcement or anything. And then the big thing is from that experience and just kind of like knowing how classroom kind of dynamics work is that the teacher sets the tone. So the teacher doesn't have to announce anything, but the kids see her or him saying Andy or he, him pronouns, they kind of follow suit, whether they kind of know something or not, because a lot of the kids I had gone to since grade school with, so they did know me. But I noticed in classrooms where the teachers were affirming, they're like on board 100% Andy, he, him, the students would follow suit even if they were kind of confused, didn't know about it, or what had their own ideals. They kind of followed whatever the teacher said. So I think that's so important, is getting those teachers on board and understanding the importance of this.
All right, so Leanne, as a parent, did you feel that the school supported Andrew? And what about the other parents? Did you get any reaction from other parents to what Andy was going through himself in school?
Well, I will say there was one of his teachers to whom he knew he couldn't come out anti-LGBTQ things in the classroom. And then there were issues at the school from him putting his name on the homecoming ballot under boys, got him called to the principal's office.
Oh, really?
The yearbook teacher wouldn't, I hate to say, I feel like I'm calling people out at that school, wouldn't listen to him when he came in and asked to be in the yearbook as his preferred name and under boys type things. So there were issues that did occur that were challenging. And so, yes, he overall had a good experience, but there were some difficult issues. And like I said, getting called into the principal's office was something that never happened to him in his whole life.
So did they call you in too? And then did you, intercede for him?
Yes. So what happened is he let me know that he had been called into the principal's office, and I did have a relationship with the principal, so contacted that person right away and said, I want to meet with you. And at that time, now we're talking fall of 2016, there wasn't a lot of guidance from the school district on how to handle these situations. And that was what the principal said, even though the principal really did a bad job and made Andy feel like he was bad. The principal also said that at that time there was no guidance from the school district on how to handle these situations, right? So fast forward to today, the district does have guidance on that and has, given trainings on it. So, but sad to say, a lot of kids still get bullied. They have teachers that bully them, even in charter schools, because our charter schools don't even have to adhere to our school district's rules. They're an issue as well. So there's still quite a lot of work to do, but there is more guidance and definitely more support from the school district.
And this experience, did this prompt you to get involved with Gleason?
It did. So it absolutely is what got me to become an advocate, because I thought, And the other piece of it was, like Andy said, we were afraid. So when Andy came out and started senior year in his new identity, I knew the school psychologists and guidance counselors because my older child has autism and some other comorbidities. And still I was afraid. I knew them, but I didn't go to them because, like Andy said, we didn't know who was safe. And so having had all of these experiences really got me into doing the advocacy work, because Andy and I have this philosophy that we want to kind of pay it forward and help those who come after him to make it that much easier for the parents and the kids, because we were both lost. I didn't know what resources were out there. I didn't know what our rights were. Is he allowed to use his preferred name in the yearbook? Our teachers, do they have to use his pronouns? What are our rights? I didn't even know that going in. So absolutely, that spurred me into my advocacy.
And what did you learn about those questions? Those are pretty fundamental questions.
Yeah, so this is what I've learned. So if anything is not a legal document, a child can use their preferred name. So a yearbook's not a legal document. right? You're, the kids all have a an ID badge. Their ID badge is not a legal document. The only thing that's a legal document that will have their birth name on it, unless they've legally changed their name, is their diploma itself.
And the transcripts.
But that's pretty much it.
Okay.
So kids can indeed use their preferred names on the, all those other things.
And did you ultimately, Andy, change your name legally?
Yes, I believe back in, how long has it been? 2018, I think. I was already, so right after I had started college. So maybe it had been 2017. But yeah, it has been changed. And also, thanks to the help of the GSA sponsor at my school, she was more kind of well aware of these things about like the whole, you know, if it's not a legal document, you are allowed to use your preferred name. So she, although I wasn't able to get my preferred name in the yearbook because it was too late by the time we figured all this out, but she did help me get my preferred name called when I crossed the stage. So I crossed the stage of graduation as Andrew Klum.
Okay. And you mentioned a GSA advisor. That would be a gay student group at school?
Yeah, so GSA stands for Gay Straight Alliance, although they're kind of shifting the name to be Gender and Sexuality Alliance to kind of broaden the inclusion there. But yeah, they're basically kind of like diversity groups that are safe spaces for allies and LGBTQ students to meet, and they do events, whether it's fundraising. We participated in like Relay for Life. And then just doing kind of fun LGBT activities. We had a couple guest speakers that we got in who are local to the community. So they're very helpful, and I think a great thing to have in any school for middle and high school, which I believe most of ours in Hillsborough County do.
And I wonder, Leanne, maybe you know, how will these groups be affected by the new Don't Say Gay law?
So it should not affect them at all. And one thing I want to let your listeners know about GSAs is they're so good that the research has shown that if a school has a GSA, overall bullying school-wide decreases, because it really just sends a message to all students that their school is very affirming and inclusive. So that's a good message. So that the Don't Say Gay bill is written really broadly and kind of vaguely, but it will not affect GSAs. I think if you want me to get into some of the what I think about the Don't Say Gay bill, I can do that.
Well, sure. Go ahead. I think it's important. Mm-hmm. Before you do that, I want to acknowledge that we have an email from one of our listeners. Bubba says, my daughter's a Hillsborough High student, and several of the teachers there are openly LGBT, and I wonder how this law will affect them. And I also find it ingenuous for DeSantis to claim it affects only grades K through 3. The language in the bill clearly affects all grades and all public school kids. So that seems like a good lead-in for you, Leanne, to talk about how you and Glisson view the Don't Say Gay bill.
Okay, so yeah, and I will speak, and I you may not have heard me early on. I'm also the LGBTQ liaison for Hillsborough County Council PTA. And both PTA and Glisson have opposed this bill. And just speaking as myself, what I see in the bill is it's very broadly written and vaguely written, I'm sure on purpose. So your emailer is correct that it applies to all grades. So what it says is, and I have it pulled up in front of me, it basically says that you can't have classroom instruction on gender identity or sexual orientation in grades K through 3. Now, first of all, there isn't instruction in sexual orientation and gender identity in grades K through 3 anyway. But also, Ben has language that says, but if it's deemed age inappropriate at any level, then that goes against the law that this bill is going to create.
No, we need to be clear on that. So it openly says no discussion in grades K through 3, but then it also says or age inappropriate discussion throughout.
Yeah.
K through 12,
and,
right?
Right. And it yes.
I have the arbiter.
Yeah, the arbiter of what is age inappropriate is a parent. So and this is where I think it's really going to be dangerous. I'll just give you this example. So let's say a second grader, Johnny, has two daddies. And the teacher says, Johnny, take this paper home to your two daddies. And a classmate hears that and goes home and tells their parents, hey, Johnny has two daddies. A parent could construe that as classroom instruction on sexual orientation. And then they can sue the school district at the school district's expense.
Well, let's be fair, though. If this becomes law, which it seems very likely that it will be, because DeSantis has said that he supports it, but if this becomes law, won't there be some guidelines issued by the Department of Education, the Florida Department of Education, that will apply throughout the state in terms of giving guidance to school administrators and teachers about how the law should be applied?
Absolutely. And that's what the teachers are clamoring for right now, because they're afraid, the kids are afraid. But once the it goes to DOE, that's when that's when they will write the guidance. Then it will go to the school districts, and the school districts will disseminate it out. Yeah.
But it seems to me that the most, well, of course, on a personal level, the most dangerous part of the law is the psychological detriment that it has for kids who in school who identify as LGBTQ. But overall, systemically, it seems to me that the big danger of the law is that it provides the right of a parent to sue if they believe that the law has been violated in their public school. And that is just an invitation to chaos. It's not too much different from, you know, the bounty hunting law of the 15-week abortion law, or the Texas 6-week abortion law, where people can go out and look for opportunities to sue, perhaps to enrich themselves, and it's just going to potentially cause enormous chaos in the public school system and increase system budgets for legal defense and outside counsel and things like that.
Well, I think this is going to go one of two ways, because the bill is so vague, because the direct wording is, other than the K-3, it says it also prohibits lessons, as we said, in other grades, unless they are age-appropriate and developmentally appropriate. So apparently if they're considered age-appropriate and developmentally appropriate, they're okay, but who determines that? So I think it could go one of two ways. Either the bill can be completely unenforceable, because if a parent makes the rules, that where does their power start and stop? But also it could be weaponized by someone over-interpreting it and kind of shoving in their own thing. So I think it is definitely a coin flip with how dangerous this is going to be. And just another kind of tidbit, too, is that if this goes, I think federally this could be, you know, charged. If someone wants to make a legal case, this could be charged federally due to the 1969 Tinker versus Des Moines case, that every student at every age has the First Amendment right, so.
Well, you're talking like a lawyer, Andy.
I do my research.
You made some very good legal points there, and I believe that Equality Florida has announced that they're going to enter into litigation once this becomes law, haven't they, Gabby?
Yeah, they have.
Yeah. So there will be court litigation over it. But meanwhile, unless there's some a stay issued by a court, it's going to be in force in the schools. And I wonder, Leanne, you indicated that Gleason works in the schools to prevent bullying and make a safe space, make sure that kids have safe spaces. And I wonder how the law will affect your ability to work in the schools as Gleason. Have you thought about that? And do you have a position on that? Would you be continuing to go into the schools?
And what we do a lot is we do training. And there is some language in the bill. I can't remember where it is. I don't know if you've seen it, Andy, about doing trainings that could end up being a bit of a sticky wicket. But the other problem is HB7. So when we do trainings on LGBTQ...
Explain that. What are you referring to in HB7?
HB7 is what they call the Stop Woke Act.
Mm-hmm.
And in that... So I actually heard the sponsor of the bill in committee discussing his reasons for the bill. And his idea behind the bill is that no one has privilege, everyone's the same. And so in that bill, it says that trainings cannot be conducted that talk about anyone having a bias. So like implicit bias trainings, for example. Well, when you do trainings about LGBTQ needs, you do it with an intersectional framework. And what I mean by that is that a child could be an immigrant, could be gifted and transgender, and they bring all those identities with them. So when you pair HB7 with HB1557, it's going to make it more difficult to train teachers who really need that training because they're the ones in the classrooms with our kids all day.
So what is GLSEN's position about pursuing these trainings in the schools once this becomes law? Do you know yet, or does it remain to be seen?
It'll remain to, listen, we're going to continue doing the work, and we'll just have to look at what the guidance says once DOE, you know, boils it down to guidance for the districts, and we just will keep moving forward.
So proponents of the bill, including the governor, they charge that it'll protect against, quote, injecting sexual instruction and, quote, transgenderism into the classrooms of young kids. But critics, including all the LGBTQ students who protested around the state, and there were great numbers of protests going on around this while it was being considered in the legislature, the critics say it marginalizes queer youth, and which is an already vulnerable group. So how do you, Andy, you and your mom, how do you think that the law will affect kids like you who want to discuss, you know, they're changing identity in school, who want to ask for the use of a different name and different pronouns? You know, what do you think that is going to happen with that scenario if this law goes into effect?
Right. So I think, again, I think the vagueness is just, it's really a uncharted waters. You know, you don't know how someone misconstrue, oh, hey, this teacher started using different name and pronouns for this kid. Does that count as injecting sexual orientation into the classroom? Like, I mean, going through the school system, I never had any kind of history lesson, nothing. So it's like, it didn't even exist. There wasn't any kind of talk or education, even during health class or the sex education that you got through PE. A lot of people in the state, especially in the state of Florida, is still abstinence only. So it's like, they don't even breach past that. So this bill's to cover a problem that doesn't even exist. So it's like nobody's really talking openly about these subjects in the first place. And we see that's affecting kids already because they, I mean, like myself, I don't know who's safe to go to. And can people misconstrue, you know, teachers just having a rainbow flag or a rainbow sticker in the classroom? It's tough because the teachers that do want to be supportive, they don't know, mm-hmm. can I, and they don't want to have to, you know, face legal backlash or just backlash in general. I mean, they do. They got enough on their plate as it is, so.
Yeah, teachers are challenged enough as it is. If you'd like to share your experiences in the schools as a young person dealing with developing sexual awareness or with being bullied for what peers may have perceived to be your own sexual identity, or if you have thoughts as a teacher or a school administrator about these issues and about Don't Say Gay, please give us a call and tell us about it. Do you think that the Don't Say Gay law will affect how kids are received in schools, or do you think that, you know, most teachers are people of goodwill and they're going to protect the kids no matter what? Well, we want to know your opinion. So give us a call at 813-239-9663 or email us at dj@wmnf.org or text us at 813-433-0885. We'd like to hear from you on these issues as well. I do have an email here that says, this is from Jeff, who says, it's the sensational culture wars. You know where conservatives stand. They're going to want to quiet down the gays and the woke people. You know where the liberals stand. They're going to support the gays as they support all walks of life. We are going to have an election coming up this year.
Yes.
And it's quite possible that this kind of culture war legislation will be very influential mm-hmm. in the next election, particularly for governor. And, you know, because currently, although it seems quite apparent that DeSantis is going to run for president mm-hmm. and that these are efforts in order to excite his base, his very conservative base. Currently, he's still running mm-hmm. for re-election as governor. So I wonder, Andy, as a young person, do you think this kind of legislation is going to galvanize young people to get out and vote?
Oh, for sure. I think young people are already pretty energized, especially after the 2016 election with the outcome of that. People, even the young people who didn't vote, were kind of been like, oh, wow, okay, this is like an actual big deal and kind of thing. So I think a lot of young people are very energized, and I hope to see more young people getting out to energize others who aren't as energized, you know? And I mean, I think it's tough too, because this kind of thing, this quote unquote culture war that is being started, especially by conservatives, it's in my opinion, it's a lot of noise, because they're trying to fix problems that don't exist while not really making progress on anything. It's like, well, what about environment stuff, economic stuff? It's all about, you always hear about them talking about this woke stuff. It's like, all right, but these problems don't exist. And so I think it gets, but the anger gets people voting. So it gets people on the other side voting. So we need to, I think, empower people with, empowerment, and get that, energize them in positive ways, and kind of move and be like, this is what's happening. These things are, I think people are seeing that these things are being passed. This kind of ideology of anti-wokeness is effective. And I think a lot of people are opening the eyes to that, to be like, oh, these people do have power here.
Well, I wonder how galvanizing it will be on the other side as well. Mm. You know, people who feel that these laws are dangerous, dangerous to our civil rights, but also dangerous to the health and safety of young queer kids. I mean, I have an email here from somebody who says, if this goes into effect, its only accomplishment will be more children committing suicide.
Exactly.
Yep.
And, you know, I know that that's something that's of great concern mm-hmm. to opponents of the bill. Yesterday, Florida Governor Ron DeSantis said that the NCAA is destroying opportunities for women and, quote, perpetuating a fraud by letting transgender women compete in women's sports. Leah Thomas is the first transgender athlete to win an NCAA championship, and DeSantis wants to take the win away from her. Andrew, what did you think about DeSantis' proclamation yesterday?
Again, I think it's just noise, because that thing gets his base energized, and it works. But, I mean, I was curious about this too, because I'm not super into sports, so I had to kind of do a bit of research on, like, what does the NCAA, what are their kind of rules on that? And I did look them up. Leah Thomas is following all the rules. The NCAA, mm-hmm. they approved its first policy on the inclusion of trans athletes in 2011, and the policy has been effective since then. And the policy says you must be on testosterone suppressants if you're a male to female individual. You have to be on these testosterone suppressions for at least a year, and she was. She followed all that, and also this Saturday she finished eighth, so she's not destroying. She loses too. She's just like any other swimmer. I think it's unfair to draw lines, because you kind of get into that slippery slope where it's like, okay, well, if we put in, you know, restrictions hormonally, then you're also, you know, discriminating against cis women with maybe higher levels of testosterone, like Caster Semenya, I think her name was, mm-hmm. the runner from the Olympic runner. So, I mean, she lost her case with that. So it's like, it's affecting the people that you're quote unquote trying to protect, which is
cis
women.
It is a slippery slope. I mean, I noted that Michael Phelps, who was probably the dominant, you know, swimmer in you know, for years, was found to have a longer than average wingspan and larger webbing mm-hmm. in his hands and feet. And he had hyperextended joints, and he produced less lactic acid than other athletes mm-hmm. in his sport. But no one complained about his advantages, his physical advantages, and he dominated the sport. And there are, you know, some cisgendered women who are extra tall mm-hmm. also. But if it's a tall woman athlete, no one yells that they should compete with males.
Yeah. Right.
And so if you go after one athlete's body, you really maybe have to go after them all. And if you only go after Leah or other trans female athletes, you're transphobic. Mm. I mean, because there's so many other physical attributes of other cisgendered athletes that could be considered advantages or disadvantages. So where do we draw the line with natural advantages? What do you think, WMNF listeners? Does DeSantis have a point? Do trans women belong in women's sports competition against cisgendered women? Give us a call with your opinion at 813-239-9663 or email dj@wmnf.org or text us at 813-433-0885. I mean, DeSantis proclaimed about Leah Thomas's win that the NCAA's action serves to erode opportunities for women athletes and perpetuate a fraud against women athletes as well as the public at large. And he announced that Florida rejects the NCAA's efforts to destroy women athletics, and he disapproves of the NCAA elevating ideology over biology, and he takes some offense at the NCAA trying to make others complicit in a lie. That was his statement, and I just find it so interesting that he can stand up and proclaim another person the winner, which has echoes to me of the whole, you know, Trump won the election efforts by his base. Just ignore the actual vote totals. Just ignore the actual time and scoring in a sport and just announce who the winner is. I mean, for years I've tried to proclaim myself to be 5'10" and blonde, and no matter how many times I proclaim it, it just doesn't seem to be true.
Right. And and everyone's like, oh, biology, it's all this. But it's like biology, the human experience and the human bodies are so much more diverse than a lot of people think. We don't fit into these boxes. I mean, doing even more research, I went into more of the sports, like specifically when you're talking sports, the IAAF did their own study, which is they do like a lot of the Olympic studies and such like that. So it showed that they actually did a study on women who had higher levels of testosterone, and they only were significantly better performing in only 5 of 21 events. So they're finding that these kind of biological things aren't so cut and dry. So again, that kind of brings it back to, so if you want to go biology route, okay, well, where do you draw the line? And it's tough because if you go the hormone route, well, then you have people like Caster Semenya who get discriminated against, and they were born female. So it's like, again, and I mean, if you want to get into the real nitty gritty of it, humans aren't a very as cut and dry sexually dimorphic
humans
species.
Humans are diverse.
Yeah.
Humans and human biology is very diverse. And of course, as you pointed out initially, the NCAA has rules about like testosterone levels. And in fact, Leah Thomas had to test her hormone levels before she swam. And she had no more testosterone than what was outside of their guidelines for a female limit. So I'm not really sure what the objection is here. I have a call from Susan. I'm going to pick that up. Susan, you're on the air.
Hi, I'm a former teacher and I'm a retired therapist. I'm a trauma specialist. So my take on this, I'm very worried about the kids, of course. And I think this has nothing to do with sports. I think this has to do with complete homophobic and transphobic. And I've worked with a lot of trans people, and I've worked with a lot of many different kinds of queer and everyone that, you know, identifies differently. This is about people that identify differently. This has nothing to do with sports. It has to do with trying to control people so that, you know, again, the base, you know, can get what they want. And I think it's unfortunate because it's the kids that get hurt. It's the adults that get hurt. It has nothing to do with the political party. They're not going to get hurt. But yeah, the kids do get suicidal and they do kill themselves. And like, who cares about that? Who's the advocate for that? That's the kind of thing I worked with when I was working.
Well, I think Leanne, among others, is the advocate for that, Susan.
Yes.
Leanne, are you still with us?
I am, and I want to echo Susan and what all this is doing to kids. I was recently with about 7 high school students who identify as LGBTQ, and they all told stories that they've come out to their families, and it is not going well. They're being emotionally and verbally abused. One of them was being physically abused over this. And they said that the only safe space they had was school, where they could be themselves and be out. And now they feel like that'll be taken away from them. And these kids are really distressed.
Right. And they get bullied at school. They get bullied by everybody just because they're identifying as different. And I only caught a piece of this because I just got in my car, so I didn't hear the things that you said. But, you know, I've been advocating since I was a teenager for everybody and his brother. And I'm very, very grateful for anybody and everybody that advocates. Because when kids don't have a voice, when adults don't have a voice, or when they have a voice and they're not allowed to use their voice, then we need to stand up and speak up. Because it's not right. This government is bullying people. And you got to call it what it is. You can't make it look pretty. You can't gloss it over. You can't be politically correct. They are bullying people is what they're doing. And they are harming individuals that don't have the power to fight back. That's not cool.
I mean, it's tragic that this comes from our government, too.
I know.
Which is supposed to preserve our right to life, liberty, happiness. It's you know, it's just tragic. One of our listeners wrote in to say that one thing that really pissed me off was Pushaw, that's the governor's spokesperson, Christine Pushaw, claiming that this bill would protect kids from being groomed for sexual abuse. And our listener says Pushaw should have been fired for that BS. I mean, you know, they're alleging that the schools are teachers are grooming kids to be gay, to be trans, and I hear echoes of this allegation of pedophilia even in the questioning of the new Supreme Court nominee yesterday.
And you know where that comes from? That's the whole QAnon garbage.
Yep.
It's all that QAnon garbage because it fires up the base. None of it's true. And the thing is, obviously, you cannot groom anyone to become trans or gay. That's not the way it works. They do not have facts, and they don't care about the facts. It all goes back to QAnon, which has taken over the entire party. And it scares people, and so when people have their emotions all fired up, then they listen because their brain is not working anymore.
Yeah. All right. Thank you so much, Susan. Thank you for calling in. I really appreciate you giving us your perspective.
Thank you for what you're doing. Thank you.
I have another thank you here from Sandy, who emailed, very impressed. I hope Andrew can get some traction with his message, and we will see him in a leadership role in the future. Maybe politics? Well done. There you go, Andrew.
Thank you. Although I'm not in school for politics, but, you know, and living this kind of life, you just kind of have to know your rights and become an expert in certain things because people try to take your rights away. You kind of have to teach yourself all these things and know how to advocate for yourself.
Well, that's the thing. Not every person, though, has the, you know, individual fortitude to be a good advocate, to stand up, speak out, show up. Mm-hmm. And we need that. We need that very much.
Right. So. I think that just comes from, I mean, like I said, I like to reiterate it. It's like, I was just so lucky, I think, just because not only do I have supportive family, but like friends. I think that having the supportive friends, which I'm still friends with them today. They know who they are. I do love them. They were like my backbone in high school, and they were leading me on and, you know, supporting me when I put my name on the homecoming ballot under boys. And I think a lot of people just don't have that support, whether it's friends or family. And so when you don't have those people fighting alongside you to raise your voice, it leads to those bullying. And I've heard countless cases of, you know, kids being bullied by not only the kids, but it's the teachers and everything. So my experience is an outlier. So I don't want people to think, oh, so this person made it okay. So that's the norm.
No big deal.
It's not. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, those kids that don't have your support need people like Susan in the schools to support them.
Yeah. And I want to thank her for doing all her work. She said she's been an advocate since she was a teenager, so.
Yeah, yeah, and in the schools, too. So, Leanne, I guess we don't know what's going to happen with the trainings that you and Gleason have done after this law takes effect. We don't know what's going to happen with those trainings that would benefit people in the schools, adults in the schools like Susan, right?
Right. It'll happen. It will just have to follow the guidelines. And I want to make a point, too, that the fear-mongering that's happening is happening off of things like Andy's saying, where there's problems that don't exist, or outright lies. Mm-hmm. This grooming thing, this making kids gay. Nobody chooses to be LGBTQ. Andy would have been happy to have just been born a boy, not to be transgender. And I think people need to fully understand that. And then when you talk about sexual orientation as teaching kids sex, we as adults are using our adult minds, right? Because we are sexual human beings as adults. Children don't know what that is. Mm. So putting the label of you're teaching them sex on a five-year-old is ridiculous. A five-year-old doesn't think like that, right? So people are using their adult brains to analyze children. And it's all just based on fallacy.
We have a contrary opinion from Rick, who writes in to say that I hate DeSantis and do not support any of the nonsense bills that the legislature just passed. But DeSantis is right on this. Trans people should not compete in sports against non-trans people. If the Democrats want to hold on to that point, they'll reelect DeSantis. There are too many parents that feel the way he does. If you want to be trans, great. Just don't compete in sports. That's from Rick. That's an opinion from Rick, who writes in. I'm sure that he's right, that there are many parents who do feel that way, and certainly sports parents may feel that way. Girl sports parents may feel that way, feel that their child is losing some competitive advantage to a trans kid.
Right. And it's like, I do understand where they're coming from, because obviously with, especially once you get to like collegiate level, with winning, you know, that scholarships come into play and everything. But again, I think it's just, it is tough. I don't know what the cut and dry answer is, because I don't think there is one, because as we're seeing, the science is showing that there's so many factors that go into who has a biological advantage versus disadvantage. And it's a very in-depth conversation that I think people are looking at very surface level, and it needs to be go into more depth. But I do understand the concern, but again, this is, it's not happening en masse like people think it is in the numbers. And like these, like I said, dominating, like Leah Thomas came in eighth this Saturday. So she wins and loses just like everybody else. And I think it's just a policing of trying to police women's bodies, especially because when you put in the hormone restrictions, and then you go back to like the Michael Phelps thing, who has, he also has all these natural advantages. So it's like, where do we draw the line? Whose bodies are we policing? What parts of their bodies are we policing? And it's like, well, who exceptions and all this. So.
Right. And they love to police women's bodies in every possible way. Mm-hmm. Well, we're getting close to the end of the show here. I want to turn back to Debbie for a minute. Thank you, Andrew and Leanne, for your discussion. I want to turn back to Debbie and end on a happy note to review the fact that this weekend is Tampa Pride.
Yes.
All over Ybor City.
Yes.
Starting on Friday night. And I have an email here, Debbie, that I just I want to share that says, hello, WMNF. Broken Mold is presenting a great lineup of queer country artists at Hooch and Hive this Thursday on March 24th, featuring Austin Lucas, Lavender Country, Paisley Fields, and more. So I just want to add that to the lineup of Pride events that you're going to quickly tell us about.
Okay, Thursday night at Hotel ABBA, we have our sponsors event where all the sponsors and the Grand Marshals will all be at. And there we're having an aerial artist outside by the pool. And we have entertainment and a magician. And that's going to be a really nice event, because that's a new hotel over on Kennedy, and it's gorgeous outside.
What's the hotel?
Hotel ABBA.
ABBA. And what time is that on Friday?
It starts at 7 o'clock.
Okay. And is that open to everyone?
No, you have to get tickets, and you can get tickets online at tampapride.org.
Okay. So then, for all ticketed events, go to tampapride.org.
Yes. Okay. And then Friday night, a lot of people like Pose. We have a mini ball that's at the Cuban Club inside.
Oh, that's the voguing.
Yeah, it's the voguing, exactly. Uh-huh. And the tickets are available there. And then Saturday we start at 10:45 on the main stage with the Tampa Pride Band, and Carrie with guest speakers from the city council and different people around town.
And, of course, the parade is Saturday
and
day.
The parade is at 4 o'clock.
4 o'clock on 7th Avenue in
New York
City.
With Pride at Night, it starts at 7, and then once it gets dark, we have not a laser show, but the drone show with the drones above. So,
all right. Well, it sounds like an exciting weekend for Tampa Pride. So if you're looking for something to do and entertainment, come out to Tampa Pride this weekend. I want to thank my volunteers, Jessica, and my phone answerer, and to all the listener supporters of WMNF and independent non-commercial media in Tampa Bay. Please stay tuned for Duncan Strauss with Talking Animals next. Thank you to Leanne and Andrew Klum for being with us, and Debbie Ducco for telling us about Pride. We are WMNF Tampa, and we are out of here until next week. So thanks for tuning into Midpoint.
Got so many
wasted.